This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Oh my gosh, Shelby, I'm so excited that you're here. I got you something. A little jambon. I get you a little jambon.
Jambon.
I thought you might like it.
Yeah.
Your people love it.
I never know how to move on from these. Because you choose the worst. You choose the most awkward scene to quote. And then I'm like, how do I engage in this if I am not the community you say I'm representing, you know? I can't do a Penelope Cruz.
No, come on. Do a Penelope impression. Cruz accent. Come on. It'll be good. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. The people will like it.
No. I reject that invite.
Okay.
Wholeheartedly.
Rude. Today we are talking about the film The Invite, featuring Jambon, bought by Olivia.
I don't think you're saying that right.
And neither was she. So,
you're right.
Bought by Olivia Wilde's character for Penelope Cruz's character at a sort of like cocktail hour. Is it supposed to be a dinner party
from hell?
I guess it's
it was going to be a dinner.
She throws the souffle in the trash rather quickly.
Yeah.
Yes, this is Olivia Wilde's new movie. This is her third movie, I believe.
Yeah.
Coming off of, well, she's an actress, first and foremost, or was an actress. She was in House. I feel like that's what she became famous for, was playing a character in the TV show House. Did you watch House?
Oh, I did, of course. That was a family favorite.
Okay.
We really would. We would watch that.
You would like get out the jambon and just sit down, watch a little House, Olivia Wilde. Olivia Wilde, whose real name is Olivia Cockburn. Wonder why she changed that. That's incredible. But then in 2022, in 2019, she directed Booksmart, which became a huge, massive hit. And now she's, I think, a fully fledged director. She had Don't Worry, Darling, which was obviously more about the press cycle than about the film. But I thought it was like well directed, sort of, even if it was a bad script and not everyone was good in it. You know, like it was a pretty movie. Yes.
Okay.
And then I don't have this.
So. Yeah. And I think it's also important to note, because we've talked a lot about like people who write and then direct their own stuff.
Yes.
Olivia Wilde has not written any of her movies. I never put that together, but she is not the writer of any of these scripts she's done.
Which I think is good. I'm like, I think we need more people doing that.
Exactly. It's good. I think she knows that she has a strength and she's playing with that. You know, she's exploring that as a director and she doesn't need to wear all the hats. I think Don't Worry, Darling was a rough one because she did want to try and do a little bit more tinkering, toying, and she was acting in it too, and it was like it was a messy script to begin with, and then her angle on like promoting it but not wanting to reveal the twist was so weird. So I think we love a try, and I think this is a return to form for her, so it's a nice
Don't Worry, Darling was also haunted by the specter of her supposed relationship with Harry Styles.
It was supposed to be Shia LaBeouf.
And they were
butted heads.
Yes. And then they were like dating on set. And then Florence Pugh supposedly hated them.
Florence Pugh had to take over directing, supposedly.
And then Harry Styles like really has not acted since. He was like, I've had enough. That one dance sequence was too much for me. I actually never need to do this again. Yeah, also, I think that Don't Worry, Darling, of the three movies, is sort of, like, the biggest reach, because it is a sort of sci-fi kind of thing when you actually, like, get down to it, where Booksmart and The Invite are both just straight, like, very straightforward.
Yeah, human-driven.
Like, like, human-driven sort of smaller stories that are much more intimate and realistic. And I think as an actor, because she is a really good actor as well as director, like, she can tap into those, like, human connections. And I think that probably makes her a good director of actors because, you know, she knows, like, what they're looking for and what they need. Whereas I think with Don't Worry, Darling, it was such a weird concept that that probably didn't actually end up helping as much. Where like this movie, The Invite, which was based on a move, or which was based on a play that was then turned into a, I'm like, okay, let me see if I can get this right. It was based on, it's a stage play, a Spanish stage play that was then turned into a Spanish movie. And that movie has since been adapted into French, Italian, whatever they speak in Switzerland, Swiss, and South Korean, and then now English. So this is like a tried and true sort of concept that they have. And it's about four people.
I know. And it's, I mean, that speaks to how globally relatable discourses on marriage and sex lives are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is starring Olivia Wilde, Seth Rogen, Penelope Cruz, and Ed Norton. And that's it. That's all you get.
Yes.
And it kind of came, it premiered at South by Southwest.
It premiered at Sundance.
Sundance,
which same difference, whatever.
Respectable. Okay. But I didn't hear about it. I didn't hear about it until like the week before it was opening. I don't know how they decided to roll out promo, but I think in some ways it worked because I think it was like, okay, you have a little teaser, dinner party from hell, get butts in the seats because people look it up and there's all these good reviews from Sundance and people liking it in theaters. And I liked that it wasn't, you know, I think comparing it to Don't Worry, Darling, they were like, we're not going to do a long campaign. We're not going to like over promote. Olivia Wilde doesn't need to be on every podcast.
Right.
And I think that was good.
Well, also probably Olivia Wilde doesn't want to be on every podcast because people are going to ask her about Don't Worry, Darling, and she does not want to get into it.
Yeah. But we did get a little bit just pre-movie about like why she was drawn to this story. She's obviously gone through a very public divorce where I think it was Call Her Daddy. She was on the Call Her Daddy podcast and she talks about the moment where she realized her relationship with Jason Sudeikis.
Jason
Sudeikis was over and how they just kind of realized they didn't have any knowledge of each other anymore. Like she said, why didn't you get me a birthday present? And he said, I don't even know what you like. And that was when she knew, oh my God, drama. And then she talked about like, how she was served papers and on stage. Truly the messiest
incredible
divorce. I loved it. Everything about it. But yeah, so this movie has allowed her to kind of address some of the discourse around her without having to do a full download on like the Don't Worry, Darling and the Harry Styles of it all. And so I think this made sense for her as a next movie. And she had the script. And then,
written by Rashida Jones.
I know. Speaking of people just like doing their own hobbies, picking their own interests, trying to make something work. But this was an interesting setup because instead of your traditional like film where you shoot out of order, you just get the script, you memorize your lines, Olivia Wilde decided to workshop it like a play. And the four cast members got together with the writers and just read through it, did table reads and like stage readings to try and suss out how these characters would actually feel once they're engaged with each other. And that changed the script throughout this like this 1 month process. And ultimately they shot it in order too, so that they could really have an authentic feeling ending, I guess.
Well, the nice thing, so the movie really only stars the four actors, and it's mostly all set within their apartment. There's a little bit of like stuff beforehand and a couple sort of like flashbacky kind of like brief glimpses, but it's mostly all set in the same apartment, which does give you the luxury of shooting the scenes in order. The reason why they obviously don't shoot most movies this way is because you're driving around to different sets, and it's like, okay, if you're outside this school in three different scenes of the movie, you're going to shoot all those scenes at once. You're not going to like go there one day, set up, shoot the first scene, then go shoot a bunch of other stuff, then come back a week later. It's like, it just doesn't make sense. But when you're all in one apartment, it's really nice because you can do however you want.
Yeah. Do you think this? Okay, because when I first heard this,
what are we
doing? I was like, this feels a little. It feels a little pretentious to be like, we're going to read through it together and like really see where these characters take us. But do you think that actually helps?
Actors do weird things, you know? Like, actors do strange stuff. And on one hand, like, yes, I do think it's pretentious when you're getting into sort of like the method acting of it all. And it's like Daniel Day-Lewis is texting people pretending to be Abraham Lincoln. Like, too far. Like, I think that there is a point where you're sort of like, okay, I don't think you need to be doing this. But far be it from me, who's not an actor, to be criticizing the way that people get into character, whether it's like reading the stuff or rehearsal or embodying things or, you know, thinking of the characters' like lives outside of the scripts. Like, I do think that there are some actors who just sort of like show up and, you know, like have the ability to get into a character and do the scene and then like immediately leave that character. But I think other people like, you know, sort of to take some time with it. So I don't think it's that weird. And this does, like, watching it, I was surprised that it wasn't based on a play. And then to later learn, like, oh, okay, it actually sort of was based on a play. Like, it makes sense. And I think if you're doing a play, you are doing a lot of rehearsals. And you are sort of, like, figuring out stuff as you go. And so I think it makes sense that they sort of went through that type of process here. Also, I think because she's a director and also an actor, one of the main characters in the movie, it's probably easier to do like rehearsal stuff and figure all of that out. And then on the shoot day, like be able to be in charge of like the more technical aspects than to be trying to figure out the like performances while trying to figure out the like technical aspects.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I'm curious how the writers feel. Like, you know, writers are often like forgotten, whatever. There's always like rewrites and what all that and all, you know, whatever. But I feel like what's also interesting about this movie is because it was so collaborative, I am like curious about how that divided up. Because they say, oh, it's so different than the first script. And then Ed Norton is like, suppose he says, and Olivia Wilde said that he wrote his final big monologue himself.
Right, which is great.
Which is a good monologue, but it is sort of like, just the ego involved with being an actor and being a star is so fascinating to me. And I always wonder what it's like to be on the more like back end of that, such as a writer, but also having it be writers. Well, Rashida Jones is one of the co-writers, and she's an actress, so she's been on both sides. And I wonder,
and so
like,
is the other actor. So is the other writer. William McCormick is also an actor.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he was on The Sopranos and stuff.
Okay, yeah. So I'm just like curious how that actually like played out, because
I mean, I think that's kind of how it is with a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Because even like if you're a comedy, you know, they'll shoot a scene based on the script and then people will do ad libs and sometimes they'll keep that in. And even if you're not a movie like that, you are a more straightforward genre where people are sticking to the script. A lot of times when you get to the editing phase of the movie, you have to cut things or add things or, you know, get additional scenes that weren't in the script because things just don't flow well.
Yeah.
You know, like reading a scene on paper is obviously different than doing something in person. You know, if it's like, oh, in this scene, they're supposed to be building a tent, but then they're also talking, you might, when you're filming it, realize like, oh, shoot, they actually take longer to build the tent than we have the dialogue. So we need to add more. Or like, oh, they actually finished the tent too fast. So we need to, you know, cut some lines or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of that stuff that happens. And then, of course, the WGA, the Writers Guild, like goes back over the original script and the final movie and like looks at a bunch of things to figure out who to give credit to, which is sometimes why movies have weird writer credits, because it's like, oh, the director gets a writer credit because they rewrote enough of the script on set that then they were actually a writer, even though they didn't write the original or whatever.
Yeah. But on this, none of the cast is listed as a writer, which, great, whatever. Cute. So they did this. And the movie is really fun. Like, it was a good time. I think the good reviews speak to that. I think the audience is showing up speaks to that. And especially coming off of someone who could be treated as like a laughingstock or like not trusted to pull through again. Like, it's an impressive feat that Olivia Wilde was able to like reclaim a sense of, I don't know, serious auteur-ness to her name, and recover from the Don't Worry, Darling mess.
I mean, I think that doing the film festival route obviously made a lot of sense for this, mm-hmm. because then you have the audience who's watching it. And also Sundance, now that it's a less serious festival than Venice, which is where Don't Worry Darling famously premiered, but it is like a little bit more low key.
Yeah.
And so I think people don't have as high expectations. And so if you go in and have a good movie, like the word of mouth will buzz you. And obviously the Don't Worry Darling press cycle was really bad, but I also sort of don't know to what extent the average moviegoer, like if the piece of that that most connected with them was that Olivia Wilde was the director, and then they would also know that Olivia Wilde was the director of this. Like,
yeah, for sure. And then the last note before we jump into the actual movie is the
Jambon. You want to talk about that some more?
No, now I lost my thought. What was it going to be about? Oh, no.
The writer, the director, the director, the casting, the music.
No. We'll move on.
Okay.
We'll move on. It'll come back.
Well, so it's about two couples. Olivia Wilde and Seth Rogen's characters are married. They live downstairs in an apartment building in San Francisco. And then Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton are their upstairs neighbors. And they've had like interactions, but they've never really hung out before. And they've been talking in the hallway like, oh, we should have you guys over. Oh, you guys should come over, whatever. And now is finally the night that this, like, you know, they can't sort of put it off anymore, that they have to do it. But in addition to Olivia Wilde sort of just wanting to have this get together, they have also been hearing Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton have very loud sex upstairs, and they're both sort of annoyed about that, and Seth Rogen is preparing to have a confrontation of the couple when they arrive. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the basic table setting. We get to see Seth Rogen and Olivia Wilde's relationship, and they're sort of like bickering before Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton get there. So we kind of understand them as a couple better. Yeah. And then you get this outside force that enters, and you're not really sure what's going on with them and their relationship. And then very much like a play, a lot of these plot points sort of are unraveled one at a time to various like reactions by the group of, oh, like, we've been hearing you upstairs, and then Seth Rogen, you know, or, and then Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton were like, oh, yes, we were going to talk to you about that, like, because actually we've been having sex parties upstairs with other people, which then prompts a bunch of questions, and then like, oh, actually we sort of wanted to meet you because we were wondering if you wanted to have sex parties with us, like, it keeps unraveling level by level,
where you ante.
And you get to understand all four of these characters and their views toward themselves, their views toward their own marriage, their views towards the other marriage, their views towards sex. And it's really, I think, a fascinating character study. Like, all four of these actors are doing a really good job. They all have very interesting, layered, deep characters. I don't know if this will get like Oscar nominations necessarily, just because of when it comes out, and it's kind of like a comedy, but it should. Like, I think all four of these people are definitely going to be in the awards conversation, even if it doesn't quite pan out.
Well, that's part of what I wanted to talk about. I remembered it came back to me. I knew it would. Mm-hmm. The comedy element of it, because so often we kind of write off comedies, and this premiered at Sundance and it instigated like a bidding war between all the big, you know, houses who wanted it. And Netflix was going to pay a pretty buck. And they're like, we think comedy belongs on streaming. And Olivia Wilde was like, well, I just disagree. And she made an interesting point about how comedy honestly should be the one with an audience, because you have to react with people to really enjoy like the fullness of a comedy show. Like, you know, like that's part of it, is the communal experience of laughing together. And I was in a theater, you know, it was a full house, and it was fun. Like, it's different than watching something dramatic or, you know, epic in scale. It's very intimate, but those laughs feel more real because it's like based in reality. And like, you know, it's all these couples sitting together and they're chuckling over various marital spats and extreme situations. And I think that was what was refreshing about this as a film, is, you know, getting to have that crowd experience with a comedy and having that comedy take itself seriously. Like, it wasn't your, it wasn't like the traditional, you know, slapstick comedy or, you know, dirty, edgy rom-com type of comedy that you're familiar with Seth Rogen doing or whatever. It was very much like, yeah, like an artistic, highbrow, but very funny script. And I think that was really elevated by having the theatrical experience. So I think there is definitely a universe where this will get, you know, some various Oscar noms, because I think it really strikes that balance of what the Oscars are willing to allow in a more lighthearted, you know, genre.
Well, it's funny, but it's very grounded. Yeah. And the stakes are really real for both of these couples. And the ending is, which we'll get into in a bit, but like, is sort of melancholy in a way that is not at all comedic. And yeah, I guess, why do we think that comedy has sort of become this genre that's relegated to streaming? Because like you said, when you think about movies that are best to be watched like in an audience, it makes sense that comedy would be something that you do watch in theaters, and that dramas would watch at home because you need to be more focused, and it's sort of like, it's a more intimate experience. Like, you don't need to be sitting next to somebody else if you're like crying watching the the screen, but if you're laughing, it does help that there's like a room of people laughing. In the same, like, horror, I think, is another thing that really works well in theaters, because you know, it's immersive. There's like, you can hear people reacting or see people reacting. There's gasps, and then also, you know, you can't sort of, there's no escape for you if you're afraid. You're kind of stuck in the chair. But yeah, it's weird that like Netflix sort of took over comedies, probably because they're cheaper and easier to make, and then just put them on their streaming platform. Don't need to worry about
making money back in the same way.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I think my answer would be everything deserves a theatrical release. Everything's better in theaters. Obviously, that's not realistic with, you know, the price of going to a movie, the people's willingness to go to movies anymore. But it is sad that like comedies have been the one to take the hit. Because, yeah, I think this movie, and it reminded me a little bit of The Roses, which came out last year. Also a marital spat, also a dark comedy. A little bit more campy than this, obviously, but and I didn't enjoy it as much. But it also was a theatrical moment, and I think it had a lot of fun having that. Because otherwise, it just feels like no one invests in it. No one takes it seriously. No one cares about it if it's just like thrown up on Netflix and forgotten about the next weekend.
Well, this reminded me a lot of both The Drama and Materialist that have come out in the last year too, which were also sort of these like comedy drama hybrids about modern day relationships. And I think both of those were great to have in theaters because they sparked all of this conversation. I don't know if this is as
it's not as like edgy. It's not as
there's not like punchy. As much of a question to sort of ask of like, oh, should you do X or Y? Where it's like with Materialist, it's, oh, do you date like the rich guy or who like has everything going for him, or poor do you guy, date the poor person who like you sort of have this like weird connection with? And then obviously in The Drama, it's, would you date somebody who like almost did a school shooting. But the invite, like, I guess, yeah, it's like, well, would you do a foursome with your upstairs neighbor? Like, I don't know. It feels a little bit more far-fetched.
Yeah. I know. But it was so fun. And I think it was surprising how funny it was. Not necessarily because, like, you know, you explain the plot and it is funny. You know, this, like, couples being... this couple on the brink of divorce is being, like, offered a sex party with, like, the hottest neighbors you can imagine. And all of that is, like, funny. But I think it surprised me how like, the humor wasn't necessarily in every line, but the expressions and the physicality of these characters and, like, the side eyes and the, like, gasps and the, like, like, honestly, one of my favorite parts was when they first found out that they were an OPA couple who were having these sex parties, and Seth Rogen and Olivia's characters, who hate each other all up to this point, suddenly find, like, a thing to gossip about, and they're so excited they have to excuse themselves and be like, oh my god, like, can you believe this? You were right. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, and they're so excited, and it was so funny that it's like, you can, like, picture the type of people who would just be stoked to forget all their resentment about this one good piece of juicy gossip. And so, like, things like that
were just felt so... brings us together. Everybody likes to poo-poo gossip. Oh, no, I would never gossip. No, gossip is storytelling. Yeah. It's a tradition that goes back thousands of years that should be celebrated. It's a way of bringing people together.
Exactly.
It's, you have to talk about what is going on in the world and understanding other humans. I think it helps you understand yourself better and helps you understand other people better.
Yeah.
And also, it's like, in life, there are people who you like more than others. And we need to stop pretending that that is a bad thing, you know?
And you know what? I do think gossiping helps preserve relationships that otherwise could falter. You have to have an outlet. It doesn't mean your relationship is toxic or your relationship is over if you have an irritant or you need to get something off your chest and you turn to someone else. Like, obviously there's a line, but I do feel like so much of relationships today is, like, policing how someone makes us feel instead of finding an outlet for that feeling and moving past the initial trigger, you know?
Well, and I think that there's certain things with relationships that are going to always be annoying.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out, like, how to sort of make them funny and then get past them.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, there are certain things that are kind of non-negotiables. But
right.
But, like, if someone is, like, overly chatty at parties,
right,
like, that is going to be annoying to you as the person dating them probably forever. And it's not really something that the other person can change. It's just always going to be there.
Yeah.
And so you have to figure out a way to, like, make that funny and sort of, like, complain about it with your friends, but then also, like, you know, get past it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a deal breaker.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what's refreshing about this movie is, like, you know, it's not like Marriage Story or something like The Roses where you're like, why are these people even together? Like, it's very obvious that there was real love in this film. And I like that it starts with this there's no picture of them, but there's this background noise of their characters happily clunking out a tune on the piano, and you can feel, like, the joy of that earlier side of their relationship and where they were both, like, willing to make fun of each other and be made fun of and have joy in that. And then the movie immediately goes tense with where they are now, which is very different, and they're blocked each other off. They've locked each other's, like, they put up these walls and they're not interested in connecting the same way. But that's what made these little moments where they were able to reconnect on the gossipy side of, like, watching these neighbors. And that's what made it, like, not just, like, farce, because there was real heart to it. And by the end of the movie, when they're, like, realizing maybe this isn't working anymore for us, but there's still, like, love there and there's still an understanding there. And so having that duality of, like, I hate you, but I also, like, love what we had, and do I fight for that again, or do I let it go and, like, move forward into something better? Like, that's such a fascinating question, and I think that's what speaks to audiences here.
Well, also, while yes, this is a movie about like how a relationship isn't working, the problems that the relationship has are not necessarily like problems with the relationship itself so much as two people who have their own issues that they are like unable to get past themselves that are impacting the relationship. It's like Seth Rogen used to be in a band. The band sort of fell apart. Now he is just like a music teacher at a B-tiered school, and he is living in his parents' house. And so he feels like bad about the fact that he's like never able to accomplish anything. And Olivia Wilde has a line at some point in the movie where she's like, you should be happy about this. Like, people would kill for this apartment like that they inherited, and you can't find happiness in this really good thing that you have.
Yeah.
And it's eating you up and making you miserable and giving you back pain. And like it, and if you could just sort of figure out how to get past that yourself, then like we could have a relationship, I think, that would work better. And I think that, like, you know, not to like get too into the weeds of like my own personal problems, but I think that these past couple of years, you know, like, I had cancer. That was a really difficult experience to go through. Also a very isolating experience to go through, because, you know, like, I think as a young person, especially, like, I don't know other people who have cancer.
Yeah.
Like, the only people who I know really are either like old people who are probably going to be like dying of it, or people who are kids. Like, I have a weird thing where it's like, yes, it is really bad, but at the same time, like, I'm probably not going to die. Like, it just, it's a weird headspace to be in. And it's a headspace that you're kind of stuck in by yourself. Like, even though I have lots of good friends, and I found myself at various points, like, getting very frustrated with people who I care a lot about. And I knew that it really wasn't frustration with them. It was more frustration with like my situation and then myself and how I'm dealing with this. Like, and I think sometimes, like, like, in life, just like, you, the relationship isn't working, but it really has nothing to do with the relationship. It has something to do with something outside of it. And I like that this movie kind of like pointed that out and was like, if you can figure out yourself, then actually you can go back to this like good version of the relationship. You just have to like want to make the choices to change something and reframe your state of mind, which is sort of like the question, I guess, that the movie ends with in some ways, of like, is Seth Rogen willing to make some changes for himself that will also potentially make his relationship better, or is he not?
Yeah. Well, and I think, also, it's not, like we were saying, it's not like these deal breakers. It's not like there's been abuse or cheating or anything. It's just like stubbornness and digging in and entrenching yourself in your own psyche. Because, I mean, yeah, I'm all like Seth Rogen in this, he's the funny guy and he's very judgmental, and you can feel his like self-loathing for being this kind of quote, like, self-prescribed loser who like failed at doing what he wanted. But at the same time, Olivia Wilde's character has her own issues, and there's a moment where she like she clearly, like, one of her things is she can't like tell people what she wants or needs.
Yeah.
And that's a recurring theme. But also one of the most like shocking and laugh out loud points was when she like calls herself the C word, and she's like, that's just my inner monologue. And it's like, that was so like shocking and devastating, because it's like, well, shit, you should not be talking about yourself like that. Like, to, because she's like thinking she's, because he's like, you like looking at yourself, right? Or whatever. And she's like, no, I'm ugly, I'm stupid, I'm dumb, like, everything sucks, I'm worthless. And it's like, girl, that is not a healthy dynamic.
Right.
Like, as RuPaul would say,
well, yes.
How, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love anybody else? And so, yeah, they have these very, like, real, relatable problems. And so while I do think that if Seth Rogen would just get therapy, like, a lot of their problems would be alleviated, I liked that this movie wasn't necessarily like having an obvious bad guy. Like, there was just like some toxicity within themselves that then leached into their relationship together.
Yes. Well, yeah, because like she obviously would also need to be going to therapy and doing her own stuff. But it's interesting because also when they meet Edward Norton and Penelope Cruz, you sort of think, oh, like this is like this the perfect the right couple. Way. Like they figured it out. Like they love each other so much that they're so liberated. They have open relationship. Yeah. But then you kind of realize like, oh, wait, they actually haven't even been together that long. They don't know each other that well. Yeah. Like, he, I think, is kind of like obsessed with her because she's so exotic, but she kind of is like, eh, you know, whatever. Like, we'll kind of see how it works. Like,
because she's a sex therapist.
Right. So it does. And you can tell that she's like maybe a little too removed from things. And then he has this like sort of tragic backstory that comes out.
Good old Hawk.
That does remind, I think, everybody, oh, wait a second. Like, even though you're comparing yourself to others and thinking like, wow, like they are perfect. They have it figured out and we do not. It's like, no, actually nobody has it figured out. Yeah. And every relationship has issues and every person has like difficult things that they are going through internally, no matter how much they look like they have it together on the surface. And a lot of times the people who look like they have it the most together on the surface actually have the worst stuff going on underneath.
No, it was a fun time. I'm like, what were highlights for you? What were the funny bits?
I loved the scene where they're in the kitchen and Seth and they Edward Norton and Penelope Cruz start talking about how they maybe would want to have a kid or like sort of mention something. And then Seth Rogen's like, wait a second, like well, these are clearly way too old or whatever. And he's like, well, better get started because like, you know, like of the age. And Penelope Cruz is like, whose age? What are you talking about? And it's so like awkwardly tense. And he clearly just like walked right into it, not thinking that it would be an issue. And the way that it's that everyone's reaction is great. I also love the scene when they're debating sort of over whether or not they should open the like really old wine that their like uncle left them or whatever. I thought that was really funny. And obviously the jambon scene. Great.
Yeah, I do think like everyone's doing their best here. I mean, Penelope Cruz is such a good and like mesmerizing, charismatic actress, and she doesn't get a lot of opportunity for whatever reason to really like shine.
It's interesting because she has another movie that's coming out later this year that was in Cannes. That's a Spanish film that also did really well. And people are also saying she's really good in. So I think that the combination of the two, like sort of has her like as a lock as an early like Oscar nominee. It just sort of depends on which one of the movies like, and they end up going with. But she's incredible.
Yeah. And like Ed Norton hasn't really been doing much. Like has he had anything since Glass Onion?
That is a great question. I feel he's one of those people though who is in a lot of where he's like a random person in the something and you kind of forget that he's there. Oh yeah, he was in a Complete Unknown.
Bob Dylan movie.
As sort of like the folk music guy. And then he was also in Asteroid City, one of the
So he's just been in bad movies. But no, he's doing great stuff here. Seth Rogen, who's someone I find somewhat annoying most of the time, is actually a pleasant sort of charming here with his, you know, quips and snark and one-sidedness. And Olivia Wilde really captures that like frantic falling apart energy in a way that was so frustrating and yet funny to watch. Like when she starts to freak out when she finds out Penelope Cruz is vegan and all she's laid out is meat and cheese, and she's like about to throw it all on the floor. Like, uh-huh. She's having a panic attack. It was hilarious. And then also when she starts to cry, just because Edward Norton's character is like, I love your apartment. It's really beautiful. You put uh-huh. so much work into it. Like, I just wanted to give her a little hug and tell her she needs more yes. female friends in her life, because yes. she's clearly isolated in a way that's destroying her mentally. But no, yeah,
it's like, solution. You know, all four of these characters, yeah, like you yeah. have met these people or seen these archetypes, which I think really helped. I love the whatever is going on with Seth Rogen now, sort of like the I don't want to say he's maturing necessarily, but like he's done a lot of like producing, obviously yeah, the studio yeah. is a big hit, and he's, you know, sort of like the writer director behind that, and that show is so good, and then now he has this, like, I think he's just, I don't know if it's like an age thing or what, but he's leveled up in a way to a new group of projects and roles. Also, like, he was really good in The Fabelmans a couple yeah. of years ago, like in a more serious role, so
yeah, I feel like with Seth Rogen, it reminded me of his role in that rom-com he did with Charlize Theron.
Wait, which one was that?
Like, she's the president of the U.S.
Oh, yes.
And he's like the bumbling oh my guy. Gosh.
That I have not thought about that movie since I saw it. Wow, that was a...
No, I loved that, and I do think about it. And so this felt like a logical next step is, okay, he's mastered the, like, he's no longer the goofy sidekick. He can be leading man. And this is like a more serious approach to that, that he handles well, I think. So while I remain, you know, he's not my type, I'm happy that he succeeded here.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he really channeled that, like you can picture, yeah, you know him, you know, there's always that like guy who's with your friend who you're like, you're kind of annoying, but also very funny, but like yes. sometimes just too annoying, like read the room and get off yourself. And that's why I appreciated him and Penelope Cruz's dynamic in this movie, because at first she's like, you know, because he steps in it with the age thing. And then again, he's joking about like perimenopause, and Penelope Cruz like gives him a scathing, like, talk down about how it's not laughable and he should respect women's bodies, basically, mm-hmm. By using olives to imagine his balls being destroyed. And so at first you're like, oh yeah, she hates him, but she also holds like space for him to be annoying, but also to teach him, you know? And I admired that, is that she wasn't like turned off by him, because eventually they try to do a wife swap, and she's like clearly like into him, you know, like seeing the playful side of him. And that dynamic was fascinating to me too. But she also, when she, yeah, I don't know, she was such a fascinating character, because she presents as like always the smartest in the room, always having the most clear understanding of the dynamics. She's like the one who is kind of introducing the idea of swinging to them, explaining why they like each other. And then ultimately, when things go awry, she's the one who like breaks it down for the toxic couple that like maybe divorce is what you need, because y'all are dragging the mood down.
I mean, I don't know if you have friends who are therapists, but I feel like I have a couple of friends who are therapists. And it does feel like whether or not they are actually like in control of situations, and I think and a lot of times are not, it's like there is a certain level, especially like in a group dynamic when there's weird, you know, weirdness yeah. going on, they do sort of take control and leadership, just because they like that's a space that they yeah. are used to operating in. And also then they don't themselves have to really present that much mm-hmm. vulnerability, because they can sort of be like, okay, well, let's actually focus on you guys and like what's going on mm-hmm. here. So I thought that was very accurate. And the yeah. Seth Rogen thing, like, I have a couple of uncles that you can tell like in high school were like the life of the party, like mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. funny, like everybody loved them. And then they've just, you know, like they got married, they got older, and now they're stuck in this situation where it's like they have a wife who, you know, like likes them, but like is not necessarily like wowed by their humor because they've been living with it for however many years. And then children who are like, ugh, dad, like so lame. And you do, and like every now and again, I'll get to watch one of them sort of like in a situation with a stranger, you know, like somebody at a wedding or something that they don't really know. And like that person, like recognizes their sort of like sense of humor or like the positive qualities of them. And they haven't like that they haven't seen before because they've never met the person. And just like watching my uncles light up in those situations of sort of like, yeah, like I am a cool guy. Like I am sort of funny. Is a lot of fun to watch. And I think that's what's going on with Seth Rogen and Penelope Cruz of like, she sort of sees that he has some good qualities that maybe people haven't acknowledged really very much recently. And like taps into those. And you do see how quickly he sort of comes back to life in those scenes when they're in the study, like smoking weed together. But then at the same time, I think the Edward Norton Olivia Wilde relationship is so great because he sees like her creativity and also her like dedication to wanting things to be done well and like for her like attention to detail that obviously Seth Rogen doesn't care about because he's you know sort of slobbish in some ways. And I just it's like it's really a movie about like recognizing the positive traits in other people that maybe get taken for granted.
Because it's really easy to just say good job, or it's like all Ed Norton says at one point is like, wow, I love this rug, it's a beautiful rug, and she's like weepy, and it's like that simple, and Seth Rogen is like in the back.
And when you're in the early stages of a relationship, you're constantly looking for those things in the person you're with, and you want to compliment them because you want them to see that you see them like at levels that other people don't. But then once you, you know, sort of have been with somebody for a long time, you're less incentivized to sort of be looking around for new compliments.
Honestly, one of my other favorites is early on when they like are saying they have a daughter, and Olivia Wilde, who we haven't seen on screen at this point and never will, is like, I'm going to miss her. And Seth Rogen is like, where is she going? And it's like, you realize she's like 12 years old, but Olivia Wilde's already thinking of her leaving for college. And like, just the dynamic there of them like being confused by each other when the other one is somewhat performing for this new crowd and not being able to like, yes, and their energy. I think that was part of the fun of this. And so, yeah, I think, and I've spoken to a lot of people who've seen this and they all love it, whether they're married, divorced, whatever. I think this is just a really smart relationship study and also like a really heartfelt exploration of that, like of that question about like what makes a relationship valuable. Like this was good, but that doesn't mean it has to be forever. Like, and I think Penelope Cruz has this speech about like, oh yeah, so you want to stay together for your daughter, but do you really want her marinating in this toxic, destructive space where you resent each other and don't allow each other to grow and to feel joy and to feel loved? Like, you think that's better than having two parents who are happy but separate? And it's like really that simple sometimes. Like, it's like, y'all need to recognize that like the quote unquote like family structure isn't sturdy and strong if you guys are building it on like a pile of resentment and dislike. And so I've seen a lot of reviews that are like, divorce rates are about to spike. And I think that's a valuable reminder at times. And I like that this movie doesn't end perfectly neat, where it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to get divorced. Instead, it circles back to that moment where they used to play piano, and finally Seth Rogen opens his again and is clunking away at the keys, and she comes and joins him. And there's this really like bittersweet moment where it's like, you know what? There's like a fork in the road, and probably the easiest solution would be to like call it quits and like work on themselves and try and find joy outside of this. But there's also a window where it's like, well, at least we can end on a note of positivity, of like remembering that. And if it so happens that we're able to work through this together, like, so be it. But like right now we can acknowledge that there was joy here.
Yeah, I let's talk about the ending a bit, because I do think it is very open-ended. Because earlier, there's a moment where when they're talking through the problems in their relationship and how he has this piano in the study and he never plays it anymore because he's so depressed, because his, you know, music career hasn't gone where he wants it to. And like that she wants them to have that, that she wants him to have that spark and for them to have that connection and to play music and to sort of like go back to where they were earlier. And so Penelope Cruz gives them this sort of pep talk, and then her and Edward Norton leave the apartment and you're just left with the two of them. And it's kind of this resigned sense of, oh, like, yeah, I guess maybe we should just get a divorce and call it quits. But then she goes into her room and he goes into the study with the piano. And then he sort of looks at the piano and it is like, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Like, is it like, is he going to sort of like give this one more try and sort of try to fix things, or is he not? And then he does start to play and she comes in from the bedroom and sort of sits down next to him. And that's the final shot of the movie. And I do think it like, I do think that there is a lot of hope in that. Like, sure, they might end up getting a divorce, but I do think that it signals to a certain degree of like, yeah, the problems with their relationship were really always problems with themselves. And maybe if they can take the time to fix those, then they can take the time to fix the relationship. And also, to go back to like the Penelope Cruz quote about like marinating in bad things or whatever, it's like, yes, you don't want your kids to be marinating in a bad relationship, but also if those two got a divorce, their lives would still sort of be bad because neither of them would have dealt with the actual problem in their lives, which was not the marriage. It was, you know, their own sort of issues. And so I think that's like an interesting thing to think about. I mean, obviously I don't have kids, but of like, yeah, like as a parent, you are sort of like responsible to make sure that your own mental health is good, because that rubs off on your children, whether through a marriage or just by itself. Like, so many people have parents who are kind of shitty, and a lot of that is because the parent like hasn't gotten through their own stuff. So it's like they're not able to process through trauma, and so they're passing that along to their children. And you know, it's like, I think if my parents went to therapy, it would solve a lot of issues with all with me and all of my siblings, and probably the same for you. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think
have a sex therapist come into your house and offer to swing with you. That's the other option.
I mean, I do feel like I think this. That there is this like piece of us that will always believe like love conquers all, and like if it was there once, it can be there again. But I read the ending as less like, oh, they might make it work, and more like, at least they can.
Well, that's because I'm a more optimistic person than you are. So I was like, oh, Shelby's going to read this differently than me.
I mean, it's not even like a bad thing though. I think that's important, is like there are things that start good for us and turn out to not be right for us. And I think this like idealization of a marriage isn't always the solution. Because I don't think it's as easy as like going to therapy and getting it fixed and working on yourself. And that's why I did like the sort of open-endedness of this, because it's not necessarily perpetuating this idea that to call it quits is to be a failure or to, you know, give up. I think it's just sometimes part of maturing and like recognizing what relationships work and which ones don't. I liked that.
I think that's like why the ending is so good.
Yeah.
Because it has so much ambivalence to it.
Ambiguity,
and not like, I am not trying to say like, oh, every person like should, like nobody should get divorced. Like, right. I think there's lots of people who should get divorced. And like, I think that's a perfectly good option for a lot of people. But I think part of that comes from like either A, yeah, like this isn't the person that you should have been with from the start, or B, that you've sort of like grown in separate directions, and so it doesn't like suit you anymore. Where I felt like the issues with this couple in this movie seemed more so like their own individual things that they needed to process. And sure, maybe they process those and then realize at the end, like, wait, actually, we're not supposed to be together anyways.
Yeah.
But at least they've like, I think at least they're like going to have some conversations and sort through things in a way that is more honest and open, rather than just being like, oh, well, this is like getting hard and it's not really working, so we're just going to like hope that getting a divorce solves all of our problems, when it's not going to, because you aren't in your band anymore and you're still going to have to teach at the music school.
Yeah.
Well, we have talked for a good chunk of time about this movie, which was very great. We'll be back next week to discuss The Odyssey.
Yeah, probably similarly exciting. About the interpersonal dynamics of human relationships.
Yes.
Yeah.
So true. So yes, thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back then. Bye.